can study when we finally start our in-pro per school. We have a long way to go and a very short period of time to do it in. So we can't ignore it. It is not going to go away, except an awful lot of topography. Anything else?
Commander?
Yes.
I found this indication of how much paper's on my desk. It's dated July 17, 1995. British author Benjamin Cream, unusual message, speaks directly to the matter, reestablishing meaning in our lives, blah, 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 global crisis. He's talking about the reemergence of Maitreya, the Christ, world teacher for all humanity. And there's a picture here of Maitreya, appearance in Nairobi Canyon, 1988, story and photo broadcast by CNN. Is this the Antichrist?
Are you asking me to answer that?
I was just wondering what your opinion would be.
Well, I don't have any patience whatsoever with Krim. Maitreya is a what you would call an avatar, I suppose. He would be expected back as representing the god or the deity. On the other hand, I've told you that there aren't any such things running around in this world, including Maitreya. Now, there are some high, high energies, great spirits. And I have no right to tell you who is an anti-god, an anti-Christ. You must grow into responding and respecting and discerning. And read carefully what all is said about it. He was also supposedly stationed somewhere in London. And there are some high beings that have come out of the areas from which you would expect Maitreya. No, he is not the god of creation. And that's all I'm going to say about it.
Now, did you hear about the two planes shot down over near Cuba?
Yes.
Any comment?
Not that it can be printed in here. That is a set up.
Sounds like it.
Pure murder.
Commander?
Yes.
I just would make a very quick comment based on what you were just saying about the Grand Canyon. Because about 2 years ago, there was a... this one will probably hear. No.
They can't hear well enough when they...
Okay.
They
get
my voice. And then they complain to the word.
Yeah, the word doesn't like it.
I can't imagine that. Such a sweet personality.
The word's getting very impatient.
But about 2 years ago, there was a sudden maneuver done in the Grand Canyon where they closed off a large portion of it. I'm trying to remember. I've been racking my brain to try to remember what was the official excuse. I think it had to do with so-called crumbling of the walking paths or something that were just fine. But Callie first brought it to my attention. There was a great deal of curiosity and questioning on Art Bell's show. Nobody ever came forth except one geologist who said, "You would be surprised to know what really is going on in the Grand Canyon right now."
Yes, uncovered one of the openings.
Yes, right. There had been some quaking going on in that area, and it did cause a little crumbling of some paths, but more inconveniently, it opened. We had speculated that it opened, and commanders
It actually opened. You see, there were already openings, and some of these great caverns with these cities were investigated. And they did find the mummies, and they did all, it was found, and then these openings were closed. And some of those opened again, and a lot more of them are going to open. Let's have breakfast.
What a show tonight is in store for you and me and the rest of the country and world. Our special guest is Christopher Reeve. This program was taped just a couple of hours ago at our studios in New York. It's great to have you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, Larry. Thanks.
What?
Talk to you.
Even though we don't have a microphone, which is stuck somewhere in Boston.
Yeah, I heard it's on a plane somewhere.
No, but generally, this is difficult, isn't it, for you? To come here, come to the studio?
Yeah, it's an effort, but, you know, I really want to get the word out about what spinal cord injury is and about the hope for the future and to tell people that.
Was it something you ever thought about?
Oh, my God, no, I had no idea. I didn't even know what the consequences were.
Well, if you were watching a show, say, with Sergeant McDonald of the New York City Police, who has the same thing, it would be just an interesting show to you.
Oh, my heart would go out to him, but now that I'm in this kind of condition, and I realize, you know, what the difficulties are, you know, it's every day's a challenge. However, we're lit on the threshold now. I'm very lucky, because we're talking at a time when we're on the threshold of a cure, and what I want to talk to you about is because the political connection and the private sector to working together, we are within 5, 7, maybe 8, 10 years of curing this time.
When you mean cure, you
I'm
mean...
I'm going to get up out of this chair and throw it away and walk.
So you mean cure?
Yeah, I do. Now, even if there is an absolute cure for that, for spinal cord, every time you heal somebody even a little bit, they have a lower level, they get more... they get more motion back, more use, they become more productive, less of a burden, they can do more work.
So every
little bit helps, but a cure is possible, and they're on the threshold of it now.
You are then doing better now than someone who would have had this happen to him 5 years ago.
5 years ago, I wouldn't have survived the accident, or I would have died of complications. Today, we're standing here talking about a cure. I'm a very lucky guy.
And let's explain what is going on with you now. What is the apparatus? What is the this chair is a what? A $40,000 chair?
Yeah, it is, but I can drive it myself.
Self-motorized.
And I can do some pretty good speed on it, too. I can really cruise.
Get going.
Yeah, my son likes to hop on, use it as a go-kart.
You have no feeling below the neck?
Oh, yes, I have increased feeling below the neck. My left leg, for example, recently, I would say I've got about 75% feeling in my left leg is really coming back.
Wow.
I also have feeling down my spine more than I used to have, down to about the L5 area, which is really quite low. And, I work out. I mean, rehab is like boot camp, and I really work, and I still work at home.
Like doing what?
Well, I do exercise we call a tilt table, where you can experience what it's like to bear weight. You know, I practically stand up vertically on this strapped to a table. And I do something called the Regis cycle, which has been very kindly donated to me, where I'm on a bicycle and electrodes are strapped to me and my legs are going around. And I'm getting the muscular workout and the aerobic workout. See, I take a very proactive view. You know, I want to be ready when they find the cure. I don't want to be too weak to stand up and go anywhere. You know?
And you want to be right there online to get it.
Right.
The apparatus that breathes for you, explain how that works, because I've talked to others that I've told you with this condition, and their breathing is farther apart than yours, and some closer, and some longer breaths.
Well, what's happening with me is I'm on a ventilator, and that provides me with breath.
It's breathing for you.
Yeah, although part of my job and part of what I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of this thing and kick it out the window, too. I'm already at the point where on November 1st, I could not take one breath, not one. And now I'm at the point I can go 90 minutes off this ventilator by myself. And I work at it 3 times a day. I do breathing sessions where I just work.
How are you able to do that?
Willpower. And what they do is they take the hose off. And I know one guy, a friend of mine, actually, that a technique was called breathe or die. Just to take it off and just take it in. Now my diaphragm, which for 6 months did absolutely nothing, it got weaker and weaker, is now starting to strengthen, and I'm working on exercises to strengthen it even more.
If it is
to the point where it hopefully will kick in autonomically, and I will be able to breathe on my own, that is my goal, and I will do that.
Since there is paralysis, Chris, and we go back a long way, Chris. We go back pre-Superman. Do you feel pain when you try to take this breath on your own? So what is the feeling?
The feeling is of joy that I'm making progress.
But there must be some pressure to do it, right?
It is harder work than walking up Mount Everest with a backpack on. I mean, it's like, it is unbelievably difficult, and particularly psychologically difficult, because you know how far you have to go. But on the other hand, you know, I used to think I should find some challenges in life. Pop fly, piece of cake compared to this. However, I see this as a real opportunity to see how far I can go. And, C2, that's the second cervical vertebrae that I broke. You see, you can't breathe. If you break C4, which is less than an inch further down, you breathe. But the doctors are scratching their heads because of C2, I'm starting to breathe.
And how do they explain it?
Because I may have some innervation of the lower level. I may be what's called incomplete, where you can move down a level. and start to get innervation of the nerves. Slightly lower. Now, I don't know if I should explain. The reason I have these pauses in between, there shouldn't be any pauses on TV, I know. But
I love it. It's a good time to jump in.
The reason to take a break,
that's what we're doing. No, in fact, let's do it. This is called the grabber. You know this. Chris Reeve will explain why there are pauses right after this. Christopher Reeve, who now will explain pausing. Okay.
He opens with a pause. The reason is that the ventilator delivers air, and I can only talk while that air is kind of filling my lungs, and then when it's out, I have to wait till the next breath to come in. But that's why it gives you a chance to change the subject.
Is it frustrating?
It was at first, because, when I was in the hospital in intensive care, I could not move below my jaw, and I couldn't even speak, couldn't do anything. And so I'm at the point now I can move my shoulders, I can move my lats. I'm making progress. And to be able to talk, even with these pauses, is great, because to not be able to communicate is really frustrating.
What's the little click we hear?
The little click is something called a peep valve, which usually you see on 42nd Street, but...
Same old Chris Reeve. Nothing changes personality.
No, the peep valve is just letting air out and keeping back pressure in my lungs. It's just that little click, but everything's okay. Don't worry.
Before we discuss insurance and government and things people
right.
can do, back to, you don't remember the accident at all?
It's funny how the psyche and the body shut down when you're in real crisis.
What do you
my mind shuts down, at odd moments anyway. But
what do you remember about that day?
I remember warming up. I remember getting my horse ready to warm up for the cross country. See, this is a three-day event. There's three phases. I already done dressage, and then we do cross country. And then later the next day would be show jumping. It's all three phases. So, and this was down in Culpeper, Virginia, a beautiful place.
In the cross country.
Yes, and lovely down there. But anyway.
The passport.
I remember getting my horse ready for cross country, and you put on all your stuff, including a serious crash helmet, including a chest protector. And mind you, this is something I've been doing for years. In fact, I was third in the New England Championships last year. Not to brag, but just not. This is not something you do for a whim on a Sunday afternoon. I was prepared and ready. And I had a wonderful horse. I still love him. His name's Eastern Express.
Do you see him?
He's gone to one of the best trainers in New England, Jim Stamets. And unfortunately, he's for sale because I won't be riding anytime right away, but he's under the best of care. Anyway, I hopped on, and the next thing I remember is about 4 or 5 days after the accident coming to an hospital.
Now, this is a key to help me with this. When you open your eyes, you're in a hospital. What's your first thought?
It can't be me.
Do you think you fell off a horse?
No recollection. Gradually, I'm very lucky. The first thing I remember is my wife, Dana, coming to my side. And I opened my eyes, and there Dana was. And,
no feeling.
My situation, no, are you kidding? Nothing. Now, I was snowed. I was on every drug they've ever concocted, plus a few more.
Did she tell you what happened?
They had to keep me in traction. See, the main thing about the spine, you want to prevent swelling. And swelling is anathema. Swelling makes it worse. And if you move... If you move at all, you're in big, big trouble. That's why getting somebody off the field like that is really critical. And I'm very lucky. You would have lost me there. But fortunately, as I went over the horse, the reason that I injured myself is that my hands got caught in the horse's bridle and it came off with me. So he suddenly refused to jump, unfortunately, and I went down with my hands tangled. So normally this would have been a sprained wrist and me being mad, and that's it. This is very, very odd and very unusual. But anyway, I woke up in a hospital about Wednesday, and I injured myself on a Saturday.
No anger toward the horse?
No anger towards the horse. No, I was surprised. I mean, he'd never done that before. He was my new horse. I mean, he'd been doing cross country for he's 12. Very experienced horse, and there's conflicting reports as to what happened. Some people say that a rabbit suddenly ran out from the underbrush, and that spooked him for a second. You know, we're going fairly fast, too. This is cross country, you're not hanging about. You're galloping the jumps, you're not cantering them. So we were cruising right along, and he just suddenly put on the brakes, and this is what I'm told. And I did a field goal through his ear, so I took the bridle with me.
When your wife told you what happened and the condition you were in, were they directly honest with you? Did they tell you what had happened to his
Well, father? Oh yes. And the thing was, they were working out at that time what to do, because there's a lot of different disagreements about what you do to him. The first thing they had to do is they had to stabilize my spine, so I was there in traction with screws in my head and a big heavy sort of ball kind of holding me down. So I couldn't move, and I couldn't eat anything. They washed my mouth out occasionally with a little orange and raspberry swab. You know, I thought I was done for. And the thing is, the doctor, I had one of the greatest surgeons in the world, Dr. John Jane. And I'm very lucky that I ended up there instead of like East Elba someplace, you know. And he performed a really miraculous operation that allows me to be recovering the way I am today. But they weren't sure. They said, you know, we can't guarantee anything. 50-50, we'll see.
He's here, and he'll be here a long time. And we'll be right back with Christopher Reeve on Larry King Live. Don't go away. We're back with Christopher Reeve. What do you do with, initially, anger or bitterness, or what do you do with that?
Yeah, between 2 and 7 in the morning when I couldn't sleep in intensive care. And I called that the time. Those are the demon hours when you kind of rehash everything and you think. I've always been, you know, more coordinated than that. How did I trip over my shoelaces and have such severe consequences? And I also feel bad for other people that I've inconvenience, because an injury like this really involves your entire family and friends and everybody.
No, why me?
Oh, well, sure, there's why me, but then again, things happen to people. Why should I be exempt? You know, you look around and anything can happen to anybody at any time. That's why, little segue here, but that's why I get into the insurance issue, is that, you know, anything can happen to anybody, and everyone's entitled to be prepared to, you know, to deal with catastrophic loss like this.
Now, this can happen to anybody, anywhere. It doesn't have to be off a horse.
No,
it could be a fall. It could be anything. What does a poor person? What does a person without insurance?
Oh my God! You know, I was at Kessler Institute for Rehab, and there are a lot of people there. Their insurance ran out. They just got booted out before they were medically ready to go home. They just had no choice. Some of them end up in nursing homes just staring out the window the rest of their lives because there's no rehab.
What insurance do you have? Is it called catastrophic?
I had an insurance policy that was prepared for by my union when I worked in television all those years ago.
After?
Yeah. But my care costs $400,000 a year. And there's a cap because, you see, being vent dependent, I need someone around 24 hours a day. Because, let's say my wife has to take our son to the pediatrician to leave the house or whatever. If this vent were to pop off, I'm gone in 3 minutes. You know, I can only breathe in certain positions. And there were times when I was in the rehab center when I've experienced that, when the vent comes off in the middle of the night and you just have to hope somebody comes and gets you. Now, if there's nobody there, if there's no nurse there, you're gone. And, you know, I need that 24-hour health care. Well, that costs a lot of money, a lot of money. And the equipment, the wheelchairs, all the stuff. Now, the point is, the cap, most people don't know that there's a cap on their insurance. If you look at your policy, though, you'll be shocked to find that it's probably about $1 million. Now, in 1970, $1 million would be going to take you a long way. Now, in today's money, $1 million, that's only worth $100,000. So, the problem is, yeah, okay, the insurance companies say, well, the rising care, the rising health cost, you know, it's astronomical. But they're doing very well. If you actually look at the salaries of a lot of the people who work for insurance companies, they're doing fine.
They won't need a benefit.
No, and the point is, very few people actually need this kind of lifetime insurance. It's not going to break these companies. Believe me, you're talking 2,500, maybe 3,000 people a year.
So what's your thought?
Well, my thought is you've got to raise the caps. That's why I support the Jeffords Amendment to the Katzenberg and Kennedy Bill, S-1028.
You're going to testify for that, too, Anne.
I'm going to testify for that. I'm going to testify for raising caps. And primarily what I want to testify for is the the fact that if you invest now a little bit of money in research, you're going to save billions in Medicaid and Medicare very soon. Now, many of these politicians are afraid to spend money on research because you can't guarantee a result. Okay, 10 years ago, maybe, it would have been a very iffy. But now, in 1995, the scientists are standing, they're ready, willing, and able. They know what to do. They know how to put me back together again.
That's right. This happened to you in 95. Now we're in 96, and by 2000, one would bet research is going to produce something.
The real maverick, I say, within 3 years, I think it's going to be closer to 7 or 10 years. It all depends on the funding. Now, the private sector and the public and the government have to work together. And it's all this talk now about Medicaid and Medicare and cuts, whatever. Let me give you an example. Right now, the government spends $8.7 billion a year on Medicaid payments to people who qualify who are spinal cord injured. But they don't cure them. They just keep them sitting there, just keep them ticking over, just making the payments. If the government were to spend $40 million a year over the next 10 years, it's a total of $400 million, you'd have the cure.
We'll hold it right there and come right back with Christopher Reeve. Don't go away. Chimes, there's an 800 number for the American Paralysis Association. It's 1-800-225-0292. I'll repeat it as well. 1-800-225-0292. People who call that number for what?
To get information and hopefully to give to the American Paralysis Association.
Contribute.
Yeah, I'm on the board. I've joined the board of them because they are the best organization. The reason they are is because they have founded a consortium. And actually, they're meeting all the top scientists in the world. They're meeting right now, even as we speak, out at UC Irvine at the new center, which has been very fortunate as well. It's been named in my honor, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah, the Reeve Irvine Research Center is going to be dedicated to really pushing scientists who have been working in dark laboratories by themselves, very underfunded, underappreciated, and this very generous woman, Joan Irvine Smith. You talk about the private sector taking initiative. Well, I'll tell you what happened. Because after the accident, I never blamed my horse, she decided to kick in $1 million of her own money. She breeds horses. To found this center to be matched by state money and by other funds. So,
wow.
Within a couple of years, it's going to be a $6 million chair where it's going to be endowed to push ahead to find the cure for high quads like me.
Just because you didn't blame your horse?
Because I didn't blame my horse, and the horse people stick together.
You call yourself a high quad?
Yeah, a high quad means C1, C2. You can't break it any higher than that.
When you were okay...
I mean, when I do it fully. I go all out.
I know, Chris. I know. You don't... It's not halfway.
I don't waste
any
time.
When you were okay, do you remember back to what you would think when you saw people in wheelchairs?
I have to admit that you think, oh, boy, I'm glad it's not me.
Therefore, for the grace of God.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like to look at people in wheelchairs.
Oh, I'm willing to look. You know, it's odd is how people...
Turn away?
No. People walk in and I can sense, like, oh, I don't know how we're going to talk to him or what to do. And they're immediately put at ease. I can sense that they get over it very quickly. I've never seen anybody feel awkward. I've had many, many visitors come, and quickly they just look past the chair.
Did you ever think, as you thought in the last movie you did when you were in a wheelchair, and that was a great suspense movie, by the way. They ought to show that 100 million.
Above suspicion,
a
yeah.
Wild movie. But in that movie, you were feigning to be someone who wanted to take his own life because he'd given up hope. Okay? Now, what now?
I mean, unbelievable. Go figure.
Did you ever think of not wanting to live?
I thought for about 10 minutes when I first was in the intensive care. And when I first realized what my situation was, I thought maybe I'm too much trouble. Maybe this will just be too hard and everybody, maybe I should just check out. But my wife, my beautiful, extraordinary wife, Dana, put the end to it with one sentence. She said, but you're still you, and I love you. End of story. And then my three children came in, Matthew, Alexander, and Will, and our family was together. And I thought, no way I'm going to miss this. This is my family.
So now you don't feel like you're putting...
Oh, never. I've never even thought about it since May...
26.
Whatever. Well, no, I was in 26. June 1st, whatever, you know, whenever that Wednesday was.
Because once you decided, the family loves you, you love them,
right.
This is a partnership, there was no more going back.
No, and you know what you learn? A lot of people have been in chairs longer than me can tell you better. But you learn that the stuff of your life, I was a sailor, I was a skier, I was a rider. I did a lot of stuff, a lot of accidents, very sports-oriented, etc. I traveled everywhere. And you realize that is not the definition or the essence of your existence. What is the essence are those relationships, those people in that room, they're right there. And while my relationships were always good, now they've transcended. My son and I, and my wife and I, so that's why I can honestly say I'm a lucky man.
We're only halfway through. Back with more of Christopher Reeve after this. We're back with Christopher Reeve. I don't know why, but people thought in your that regarding you, money would not be a problem. That either you were wealthy or...
Have you seen my career lately?
No, but you were a horse person, Culpeper, Virginia. Chris Reeve is okay.
Well, I tell you what, I made some really bad investments in the 80s.
Is this breaking you?
It would if I couldn't find work, absolutely, yeah.
You are going to find work?
I am going to find work. But the thing is, we have to completely redo my house. Otherwise, I'm stuck in two rooms, and that's not much of a future.
What kind of work?
Well, we got an elevator. You know how expensive an elevator is? You ever try to put an elevator in? I don't recommend it. It's about $70,000, and we have a lot to do.
What kind of work do you want to do?
Well, I'm going to direct. I'm actually going to write a book. I'm going to give speeches around the country. I'm not going to sit home and watch grass grow.
All those things?
I've already in motion now. In fact, we started on the book. I'm very lucky in that I have a great co-author, Roger Rosenblatt.
The best. He's one of the great essayists in America.
And I said to him, why would you, a writer of your distinction, why would you want to, help me write my story in the first person? And he said to me, it would be an honor. So, go figure. But we're having a wonderful time. He comes over with a tape recorder. Right now we work once a week. And he just listens and stuff comes out of me.
This is an autobiography?
Well, it's the story of my life so far, yeah.
What about the Robin Williams story and his help?
Robin Williams is the definition of generosity. He and Marcia.
Are you old friends?
22 years. We go back to Juilliard together. And the man, again, just defines generosity. Said, whatever I can do to help. But there is this crazy cockamamie story that went around that we had signed some pact.
Pact?
Yeah, like what, on a napkin in the cafeteria in Juilliard or something?
Saying what?
That if either of us gets in trouble, that we'll take care of each other. Hey, listen, I'm going to help myself. I'm going to take care of myself the best I can. Because the one thing you want when you're injured, you ask anybody who's injured, you ask anybody who's got a problem. You want control and you want your self-respect. You don't want to take charity.
So how do you feel when it's given to you?
Well, I feel very grateful if it's a charity that I can accept. Where I feel that in some way I can pay the person back or whatever.
So you owe Robin Williams some kind of debt?
Just an emotional debt. I mean, a huge debt of friendship.
How about
as of yet, I don't owe him a nickel, and I like to keep it that way.
How about other people and people's reaction to it? We were a little surprised by the worldwide attention this got.
Stunned, because basically I was hanging out in Bedford, New York, where we live, training my horse 6 days a week to be ready for these competitions. And you forget that there's a big world outside, because my wife and I really enjoyed the fact that... We have a new little guy, Will, our little fella, and we didn't want to bring him up in the city after 20 years. We enjoy the city, but we also like our privacy in the country. So in a way, I go off to work, but I kind of forget that anybody's watching. I sort of forget.
So you thought you were a forgotten actor?
No, not a forgotten actor, but not the kind of public figure who has a problem going down the street like a Mel Gibson or something.
So you were shocked?
So when I got 300,000 letters from people all over the world... The outpouring of love and sympathy and concern and caring, I was blown away, I must say. That's what got me through those days. What I used to do down in University of Virginia when I was in intensive care, they let me get up 1 hour a day to get used to being upright in a wheelchair. And that's pretty heavy duty because your blood pressure falls apart and you really feel weird, etc. But they'd wheel me down into the sunroom, and I'd sit there with a blanket like a little old man. And my family would read me these letters from around the world, and that kept me going. The love of my family and the support of people around the world is just,
Because Chris Reeve I know, is not an emotional person. Or if he is, he certainly holds it in.
Well...
Agreed?
I guess so, yeah.
You high. I mean, one cannot picture Chris Reeve weeping.
I don't know. Not on an interview show.
No. But when you're sitting in that sunroom, I mean, that's got to... How about the president contest?
Oh, yeah. A very funny story happened, as a matter of fact. He finally wrote me a letter because he was trying to call, and I was going to call my wife at a certain time. And just at the time, my sister called from Albuquerque. And my wife says, oh, great to hear, but you got to get off the phone. The president's calling. And she said, yeah, sure. So how are you doing? Well, I said, no, get off. The president's calling. And finally, she just wouldn't get off, and the president missed the call.
So what did you hear?
He couldn't get through. Oh, he sent me such letters of support. He even remembered my birthday, and we've been talking. I've been sending him some of my thoughts about health insurance reform and about the insurance caps and about the problem. The research is a way to cut all these incredible expenses of Medicare. And they're right there. I mean, they're such wonderful people.
Is he going to back you?
He does back me.
He will back you on this appearance when you appear before the Hill. He supports this concept of the bill?
He supports that bill, to the best of my understanding. Yes, absolutely, Andy. And the Jefferson Amendment, too. It's, we've got bipartisan support, like all good things should have.
We'll be right back with Christopher Reeve. Don't go away. Where the mic is, because he doesn't feel the mic, it's on the sweater. Right?
Thank you very much.
Trust me, it's there. You want funding for spinal cord injuries. How prominent is this?
Well, it's been a neglected disease for a long time.
How many people have it?
Right now, 250,000, about 1,100 every year. And the sad thing is, it's a lot of the best and brightest people. It's athletes.
Yeah, that's right. It happens to them.
Young people, you know, and a lot of them are... You have about 40% the victim of crimes. You have a lot of people also just work-related accidents.
Women?
More men than women, actually.
No pun intended, but supermen, a lot of them. Young.
Yes, active. Young athletes, skiers, crash into trees, you know. Travis Roy, my heart goes out to him, a hockey player for Boston College.
Oh. Hey, by the way,
yeah.
On the plane that never landed in New York, when I went back to Boston, had a drive here today, folks, someone from Boston University wants to know if you would contact that young man.
Absolutely. I've just been waiting until it's an appropriate time, you know, when they're ready to hear from
him. He's just been moved, too.
He's going to go down to Shepherd down in Atlanta. Yeah.
I think he's there now. Just went to Shepherd and Atlanta. He's a young hockey player. His father was a great hockey player. Waited all his life. First 30 seconds of play.
He crashes into the boards and he's paralyzed. He's a C4 quad, just a little bit lower than me.
Can you explain what paralysis is like?
Well, paralysis is obviously...
Like your hands, you can't move.
No, I can't move below my shoulders. I mean, I could shrug my shoulders.
Does your brain want to move them?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, at some point, you know, you have to wait until they make the connection.
Okay.
What you have to imagine is like a telephone repairman, and he's out there, all the cables are broken. There's no color coding, and he doesn't have a diagram, and at some point he's got to try to put them all back together. And once he gets the cables back together again, things start moving, yeah.
Now, his old reflexes, with which the brain went to the finger and moved the finger, and that's less than a year ago, they're there, aren't they?
Everything works. We're just waiting for the phone man.
Well put. So, but that could drive you nuts, couldn't it?
It could drive you nuts, but why let it drive you nuts? What you have
to do is,
well, you just don't go nuts because you think, now what can I do? I think the only way to go through life in any situation, whoever you are, whatever your situation is, you look at your assets and say, what do I got that I can use? Well, fortunately, thanks to my helmet, I don't have any brain damage. My brain is whatever it was. And there's a lot that I can do. And so what I do is I've had to learn. The hardest thing is I was such an active person. I mean, I was really up and at them doing a lot of things. I've had to accept being still. And what's kind of interesting is that at night, in my dreams, I mean, I go everywhere. I go, I'm whole, and I'm still whole now. I mean, at least in my head, but I was all in one piece. And I go on wonderful trips and journeys, and with my wife and family, we do things. It's wonderful. My hardest moment is about 7:30 a.m. when, whoops, still frozen. However, I'm living at a time when this can be fixed. I would have hated, I mean, I feel sorry for Kent Waldrop, who is a wonderful guy I've met. football player back in 1975. He was injured. And think how long he's been.
Nick Bonacani.
Nick Bonacani. I mean, Mark Bonacani, wonderful guy.
I was the MC of the first dinner for Nick.
Well, all of them have been an inspiration to me, and I'm very lucky as I'm sitting here at a time when we are closer to the cure than we've ever been if the funding will just come through.
What about sexual feelings?
They're there. I'm like a high school senior.
What do you do with that?
Well, my wife knows it and it gets a lot of attention. I mean, she walks to the room and I'm practically leering at her. I mean, it's really embarrassing.
What do you do with it, though?
Well, fortunately, it's an autonomic reflex.
Oh, that's still...
So it works, yeah.
Hey, one great thing to hear, right?
Plus the fact, you know, that thing, you know, that has a mind of its own. That's true.
Now, you've learned that, right? Yeah. You can attest to that, right? Food, eating, you eat anything?
Now I eat like a chowhound. Before, I'll tell you, a terrible thing happened. Is that from the day of my accident until about 6 weeks ago, I was never hungry, and my sense of smell was so intense I couldn't stand the sight of food or the smell. Any kind of food was just really repugnant, and they fed me through a tube. At night, I'd be fed through a tube, and to miss eating was really terrible. Now I come home, and the wonderful food Dana prepares, being home, the family atmosphere, and I'm cleaning the plate start to finish.
All kinds of food? You could eat anything?
You name it. I just had sushi for lunch. As a matter of fact, it's lovely.
Back with more of Christopher Reeve. And the phone number, by the way, to help the American Paralysis Association for more information is 1-800-225-0292. Don't go away. Enough for coming, and you're for your courage.
My pleasure.
During the breaks, we should tell people different things happen to you. People come over, they tilt your back. Another person comes over, lifts up the sweater, and fools with the finagle thing, and you get a little water. What has been going on that the home audience has not seen?
People have done that for me all my life. No.
Shazam. Go into the booth. Fly away. Okay. What are they doing?
Well, what happens is, in order to keep my voice, you know, going, is that I have to have the breathing tube in exactly the right position or the voice will disappear. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, we're a little on the tape delay here, is because I was afraid that I could be out there live at 9 o'clock and suddenly...
You would have happily done this live. Now you might.
Yes, we're getting to that point. I'm not quite there yet.
All right, so they go in and do what?
Make sure the tube is in the right position, and they tilt me back because, you see, not being able to move, your skin breaks down. You can shift your position, but I can't, so skin breaks down. And that's a very serious problem. In fact, I've had a wound since about July that was down to the bone they were going to operate on, but fortunately, I grew with high protein.
So in other words,
they
when
cured
I,
it,
when
and
I
I'm
move
okay.
Now, as
yeah,
I move,
yeah.
My skin is replenishing, in a sense?
It's getting a break. It's keeping from being overly irritated and breaking down.
Okay, your skin is breaking down.
If I don't move. So they come over and move me around. And every night, this is the fun part, I've got to get slipped like a pancake every 2 hours.
What?
Every 2 hours. Say goodnight, and then every 2 hours, come in and flip you.
Flip you meaning turn you over?
From 90 degrees from one side to 90 degrees on the other side. Yeah, and you learn to kind of sleep through it. But
and
that's why you
reason?
you never get a full night's sleep, ever. You know, it's,
You mentioned earlier, if that thing pops out, you got 3 minutes of life.
Well, yeah, about that, yeah.
Now, that's something I would constantly live in fear of.
I did. I'm getting over it, though. But one of the things, though, is I like to see nurses wear sneakers. So they can run down the hall faster if I've got a problem.
What do you do with, and it's obvious, I know you're very jovial and you're really handling this great and you're certainly going to help a lot of people. What do you do with the obvious depression that occurs?
I don't suffer depression. In my family,
no medication?
No. I have never been on antidepressant medication since day one. Never. Not once.
It's just something you...
If you met my family, you'd understand.
You mean family going back
if
to...
You know, if you met my wife, my 3 children, my parents, I mean, you'd understand.
It's just not done.
No, I've had moments when I go, you know, I get jealous.
Jealous?
Of people, you know, say, I'm just going to run upstairs and get something. And I go like, well, I'd like to do that. But I don't dwell on it, again, because I think the cure is coming soon. And I'm in a position to help the cure come faster. I can actually do something. I'm not...
So no,
some guy sitting in the corner. I can testify in front of Congress. I can raise money. I can raise awareness.
No deep blue moves?
No, not since that 5 minutes in Virginia I told you about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. I mean, I'm not kidding you. I would tell you if it was the truth.
Do you miss acting?
Do I miss acting? Yes, I do. I think I was just getting the hang of it. And so I do miss it, because I remember doing an interview a couple years ago where I said, now that I'm in my 40s and I think in the next couple of decades I'm going to do some of my best work. And I really look forward to it. But what we're going to do is just shift gears. I'm going to move into directing, unfortunately.
You will direct film?
Yeah.
And plays?
Yeah, and plays. Those offers are already coming in.
What? For both?
For both. Yeah, a lot of offers are coming in. I'm very grateful, for example, to Keith Samples and David Kirkpatrick. I was supposed to be directing a movie in October. This past October. And right when I was injured, they took an ad out in Variety and said, this movie will not be given to anyone else. It's for him when he's ready. That's loyalty for you.
We'll be back with our remaining moments with Christopher Reeve right after this. A man in a wheelchair. The last role you did.
I've been offered, actually, a couple. The problem with a lot of parts in wheelchairs is that either the guy's the villain or pathetic. And what we need to see are more parts like Don Boyd had in Coming Home. You see a real person of dimension. And I think that will happen, you know, as people realize it's just a fact of life.
We do have a difficult time with it, do we not?
Yeah.
As you admit you did before. Now that you've seen it from both sides, what can you say first to people who can walk and run and jump when they see someone?
I say, first of all, be grateful you can walk and run and jump.
So be grateful. Be aware
and
of it.
Enjoy yourself while you're walking, running, and jumping.
And know that it could go away.
Yeah, it can go away to anybody. It can happen to anybody.
And what do you say to people who have just gotten into this? Someone watching tonight who just got in a chair.
Well, I'm going to give you an example. You will feel, why me? You will feel life is unfair. You will feel thoughts that you know, maybe it's not worth it. And be brave, push through it, you'll come out the other side and turn to people. I mean, I'm getting all kinds of calls now from people who are in that situation and want to know what to do. I went back to the rehab center to go visit some people who were, you know, stuck and wanted help. And if you turn to people who have gone to the other side, you see that it can be done.
You have faith?
Yes, I do have faith. I wear a chain. I mean, it used to get stuck around my neck and get in the way of my trach tube, so I took it off. And my wife wears it all the time, together with my wedding ring, which doesn't fit on my finger anymore.
The chain is what?
It just says faith, and it's my wedding ring, you know, and...
Now, you just moved your leg.
No, it moved by itself. What that is...
What was
it? It's my body saying, like, hey, brain, let's go.
Wait, your body is saying, hey, brain, let's go?
That's right.